next stop is River North. For the group that joined me here at Michigan and Wacker, welcome on board this afternoon to the Chicago Trolley Tours today. My name is Reggie, and I will be your tour guide. As we go west on Wacker, coming up on the left-hand side of me, let me get in the right-hand lane here, there's a fountain here dedicated to the children of Chicago. It's called the Chicago Children's Memorial Fountain, dedicated here in 1983 by the city's first and only female mayor of record, Mrs. Jane Byrne. She was elected back in 1979. Dedicated to the children of Chicago, which number well over a million people, nearly a quarter, if not a third of our population here in the city. And on the right, you probably already spotted these strange structures by the Chicago River. They look like huge giant corn cobs. That is the home of Marina City Towers. The Marina City Tower condo was built here in 1967, and it was built to accommodate people that wanted to live as close to Chicago as possible without having to make a major commute by bus or by train into the city. You have the apartments up top and the parking lot structure on the lower floors where the residents live at. It is actually called Marina City Towers because it is basically a city within a city. You even have a docking area for your motorboat or your yacht inside. Really convenient area to live at. But what's inside Marina City is what makes it truly unique and a wonderful location. There's a laundromat, bowling alley, dry cleaners, several restaurants and stores and boutiques. It even has a grocery. And during its heyday, it even had not only a movie theater for the residents here, but its own personal morgue for people that live there. So you can live in Marina City and die there and never have to leave. A true city within a city. Now as I cross the Dearborn Street Bridge entering River North, on the right-hand side is the very famous Harry Carey's Restaurant Bar, the man that did the radio announcing and TV announcing for the Cubs baseball team. Look over your right shoulder, you'll see the great one himself, Harry Carey, with two of his best friends back there, Budweiser. A Cub fan and a Bud man, Mr. Carey was before he passed away just recently, just before the Cubs began their new 1998 season this year. His grandson, Chip, is now doing the TV and radio announcing for the Chicago Cubs baseball team. Now this area, River North, is a premier spot for boutiques, shops, restaurants, and art galleries. As a matter of fact, the first people to move into this area when the factories and warehouses moved out were the artists of Chicago, opening up galleries and studios all around this area. There's about 13 galleries still operating here in this section alone, showcasing the work of our local artists and students. If you're a major art fan or collector, this is a great place to come to that showcases that artwork around here. But if you're more into the nightlife, there's some excellent nightclubs and restaurants to visit here. You've got the Hard Rock Cafe, Rainforest Cafe, Planet Hollywood, the more themed restaurants, Spargo's, Maggiano's, Joe's Italian Kitchen, Su Casa for some terrific Mexican food. And if you enjoy deep dish pizza, visit Pizzeria Uno Ordue inside, or actually not inside, but over here east on Ontario and Wabash Street. And if you're a major sports fan, not only Harry Carey's place, but you can also visit Dennis Rodman's new nightclub Illusions, or of course, the mecca of the nightclubs and restaurants in this area, Michael Jordan's place, and get some serious Bulls souvenirs. Now we're going to make our first stop in the River North area at Ontario and Clark Street, right next door to the Chicago Chop House, and across the street from the third busiest McDonald's in the world here in Chicago, the Rock and Roll McDonald's, third behind Moscow, Russia, and Beijing, China. It's called the Rock and Roll McDonald's because it has a 1950s style atmosphere inside, with rock and roll legends on the outside and beautiful murals, and some platinum and gold albums on display. intimate by tens of your favorite rock and roll and movie stars from the 50s and 60s. First stop, Hard Rock Cafe, Rock and Roll McDonald's. If you'd like to exit for this area, please, folks, as you exit the trolley, watch your step. One more quick stop by Planet Hollywood. From here we go on to the world's tallest building, the Sears Tower. There you can see the headquarters of Sport Mart Sporting Goods and Bulls Championship Sportswear, t-shirts, baseball caps, black and white. And speaking of the Bulls and championships and all that good stuff, once we get by the intersection here, these guys will go through. We may miss the line here. Well, honking really won't help move traffic any faster, sir. There you can see Sport Mart is keeping the score between us and the Jazz, as we were able to repeat the three-peat. One of the best places in the city to get some Bulls souvenirs, for those of you that might want to get some for your family and friends who couldn't make the trek with you to the city. But as we pass the Sport Mart Sporting Goods chain store, I want to show you one more thing in this area. As I mentioned the Worm, Dennis Rodman, earlier, if you look to the left of the trolley, you'll see his nightclub called Illusions. It sits literally across the street from the restaurant and club owned by Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, and Sylvester Stallone, Planet Hollywood. And there is his wormness on the wall. I can't say his airness. On that big motorcycle and cigar, Dennis Rodman, that's his new cigar and nightclub there. He had a little, party there for the Bulls win this year. And to the right, Atlanta Hollywood, the restaurant and club owned by the Hollywood stars Schwarzenegger, Willis, and Stallone. This is our second stop. This is also the best spot to exit if you want to visit Michael Jordan's place. Anyone from Atlanta Hollywood? No? Okay. Well then, onward to the Sears Tower. 586 is leaving the room. And they have a wide collection of Hollywood memorabilia inside there. The electric chair you might be able to see here in the window, that was actually used in Sly Stallone's movie Lock Up. And if anyone's a major fan of Star Wars like myself, they actually have on display one of the costumes worn by actor David Prowse, who was the actual person in the Darth Vader costume in the Star Wars movie. One of 18 costumes he wore in that movie back in 1977, 1980, and 1983. And right above our heads is the very famous elevated train line, or as us locals call it for short, the L. This is the same train that makes the loop around the city, and the same train you may have seen in movies like The Blues Brothers, Risky Business, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, My Best Friend's Wedding, While You Were Sleeping, and my all-time favorite, The Fugitive. As we make our way back around to LaSalle Street, gentlemen, here's the Owl Museum on the left-hand side, known as Hooters. Hubba hubba. And on the right, oh, he got it too, huh? On the right, now this place is very unique. This is the Ed DeBevick's 50-style restaurant and diner. They are notorious here in River North for their service to the public. Now they're owned by a group called Let Us Entertain You, which owns restaurants around the city that has a theme. The theme here at Ed DeBevick's is bad customer service. They actually hire actors and actresses to be rude to you, dressing up in big beehive hairdos, horn glasses, Bobby socks taking you back to the 1950s, and man, are they rude to you. you might want to order something, they'll tell you you can't have it. They'll have a running argument and dialogue with you just to tick you off. And to top it all off, they'll even dance on your table. So expect anything and everything at Ed DeBevick's. But folks, if you do decide to visit there, please do not take their service too seriously. It's all done in good fun, being rude to you like that. But for me, it's like going home. Like a normal day, like a normal evening at my house when the kids come over. The food gets to flying, the chairs get to be thrown, you name it. We throw in everything at our house. All right, as we now head south on South Street, I think we should all observe a moment of silence because we're going by sacred ground. Michael Jordan's restaurant bar. Now, in all honesty, folks, I gotta be completely honest with everybody on board. Michael Jordan does not own this place. It's only in his name. He actually leases his name out to this restaurant. His name is a trademark. And if you want to sell someone, make some big, big money, if you think you can make money on it, if you go to his Aaronist and ask him to put his name on it, you'll make a big profit on it. Now, the last I heard, he's made a profit of at least $2 million every year since this restaurant opened. It's been operating here since 1991. So you do the math. For the last, what, 6, 7 years? $2 million times 7, I guess. Now, the main floor has the bar area to watch all the games on their huge movie-sized TV screen. The dining room is on the second floor, where you can actually have a good meal inside. The third floor is completely reserved for the Bulls players and personnel. There's actually another dining room called Room 23, where Michael likes to eat with his family and friends. And they'll even open the curtains of Room 23, and you can actually watch Michael eat from the bottom floor here. Ooh, what a joy. He gets paid to do that, so. And if you're wondering, yes, he does come through here, but it's really rare. He's required, though, by contract, to make 4 yearly appearances there. And since he is required to make appearances there, he usually does that during the regular season as often as he can. So when it comes close to playoff time, he can concentrate on one thing, winning another championship. And let's just hope he hangs around for at least another 7th title. Heck, if he really wanted to, he could play until he's 40. Well, maybe I'm stretching it now. And maybe asking a little bit too much. Nobody's that good. Then again, we're talking about his Aaronist. Now, as we cross back over the Chicago River and the LaSalle Street Bridge, we're going to make our way back onto Wacker Drive westbound as we head out toward the Sears Tower. Along the way, as we go toward the Sears Tower, we'll pass by the main entrance of the third largest building, square foot-wise, in the world, second behind the new Ronald Reagan administration office in Washington, D.C., and the Pentagon, also in Washington, D.C. I'm speaking of the Merchandise Mart. Now, the Merchandise Mart was originally opened in 1929, and it was to be the wholesale shopping area for Marshall Field and Company. One slight problem for Mr. Marshall Fields, 1929 was the same year the Great Depression started. And after falling some $800,000 in the hole in back taxes on the building, he decided to cut his losses and sell that structure for the same amount, $800,000, to Joseph Kennedy Sr. There you can see it on the right-hand side by the Wells Street Bridge here. They were the ones, the Kennedys, that converted this area into an international wholesale shopping area. Merchandisers from all over the world come here to buy and sell merchandise wholesale. They've had expositions here, fashion shows, conventions. It is such a huge building here in the downtown area. It takes up an entire city-sized block and now has its own zip code and post office. And after converting this area into an international merchandise house, they would make a staggering $200 million profit on this building every year from 1945 until 1998. They just recently sold it to a real estate firm based in New York City for $756 million. Nearly a third of the Kennedys' millions, or I guess I should say billions, came out of this building here, the Merchandise Mart. Now, as we go around the corner here at Wacker and Lake, we are going from the west to the south. A very neat little trick we just did here. Wacker Drive is a truly unique street. It runs in four different directions, going north, south, east, and west, and is built on two separate levels. Right now, we're on Upper Wacker Drive, and directly below me is the lower portion known as Lower Wacker. This street is built on two levels to keep the traffic flowing on the upper portion at a steady pace, especially at the most feared time of the day. Charlie, you know what that is, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's called up here rush hour.
Rush hour.
Rush hour is when about 2 million people that work downtown either go to work or go home from work. And trust me, if you drive at rush hour at 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning, you'll wish you hadn't. Every road rage is person's nightmare. It's almost like the Exodus in the Ten Commandments scene when they left Egypt. Picture that here in Chicago at 5 o'clock. It is really unbelievable. But that traffic is not that bad if you stay on the upper portion or the lower portion, particularly Lower Wacker. If you have to drive to downtown, I'll tell you from experience, use Lower Wacker as much as you can because there's only about maybe 8 traffic lights down there, and 95% of the time, they're always green, which makes it pretty easy to maneuver through the traffic down there. And for our fans of opera music, like currently playing here at the Opera House, the Phantom of the Opera, this is the Chicago Civic Theater and the Lyric Opera House to the right-hand side of me, established here by Samuel Insull in 1928. But he didn't build the Opera House for the fans here in Chicago. He built it for his wife, Mrs. Insull. You see, Mrs. Insull fancied herself an opera singer. There was only one problem. She couldn't sing opera. And after only about 2 years, she decided, I think I'll retire by popular demand. And one show I'm told she was so bad, they booed her off stage. Right next to this very popular opera house, which has seen many performances like La Bohème, The Marriage of Figaro, and Madame Butterfly. Next door to the opera house is one of the busiest trade facilities in the entire country, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Center on the right, or the MERC as the workers call it. Here they trade pork bellies and cattle futures, following the markets overseas, particularly in the Asian markets right now. It's been a major roller coaster ride all week long. Took a major dip in the last couple days, but it's actually making a rebound today and yesterday. At least we hope it is today. After dropping almost 200 points 2 days ago. Some of the traders that work here get started as early as 5:30 in the morning, following the markets in Hong Kong, Tokyo, London, Paris, Rome, and of course in New York City and Wall Street, and the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia. Oh yeah, Hong Kong really moved traffic a lot faster, Cabby. People are in such a hurry around here. You need to take a relaxing tour ride. Now here is on the left, coming up to the left-hand side, the king of the skyscrapers, the tallest of the tall. And like Michael Jordan, he's often imitated, but he'll never, ever be duplicated. This is the Sears Tower, and don't let anybody kid you. This is the world's tallest building. As we said, the Chicago Trolley Company forgot about it. This is it. It stands officially 1,454 feet tall in height. Now, if you keep in count, that's about 110 stories, going nearly a quarter mile into the air. It is so tall, the foundation had to be dug some 95 feet underground to help secure it. And on a clear day or clear night from the sky deck, you can see not one, not two, whoops. Can you move just a little bit, sir? Okay, since he's gonna sit there and be a jerk. Seeing as how this is a cab stand anyway. Well, trust me, my friend, the cabs will make you move. It's either me or them. Trust me, you want to deal with me better than you will them. From the sky deck on a clear day or night, you can see the state of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin. The average distance from the sky deck on a clear day or night? 5 to 20 miles. Truly impressive. All right, folks, this will be the stop for the Sears Tower. As you exit the trolley, watch your step. Was there someone trying to get to Union Station on board?
Yeah, okay. No.
You know how to get there from here? Or you need directions?
Right, we know.
Okay. Watch your step, folks, as you exit.
Robin. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Are we not on the other one?
No.
Oh, right.
You
want
to grab tea?
Yeah, we would have time, please.
All tickets and passes, please. Okay, I'm on board now. Watch your step as you board.
Oh, yeah, no.
Watch your step. All tickets and passes.
Feet up, don't you? Oh, this is better than it.
Folks, grab a bench, any bench. Our next stop will be State Street. Home of Marshall Field, Carson Peary Scott, Toys R Us for the kids. Or if you'd like to buy some tickets to some of our shows and theaters around the city, Forever Plaid, Always Patsy Cline, Tony and Tina's Wedding, or to get tickets to perhaps one of the Second City shows, check out the Hot Ticks booth. I recommend Tony and Tina's Wedding. You actually get a chance to watch, not really a play, it's actually a wedding. You sit as you're a member of the wedding party. It's actually being performed at, what theater is that going on at? I forget. I know it's in Old Town, near Second City. I can't remember the name of the theater, though.
Steppenwolf? No,
not Steppenwolf. John Mahoney's over there, though.
Steppenwolf.
Yeah, he's at Steppenwolf right now, doing the show. But I forget exactly where it's at. I can't remember off the top of my head. Well, trust me, if you just... There's just so many theaters out there in Old Town, I just lose track of them all. Well, that in the North Side, period. Yeah, you got Steppenwolf, Bailiwick, Briar Street, where the Blue Man Group is going on. Okay, hop on board, sir.
Where's the truck?
Heavy trading, more than 600 million shares. The S&P 500 is way up. The NASDAQ index is barely dancing in the streets, up nearly 30 points.
That's correspondent Laura Levinson live to the New York Stock
Exchange. Hi there. Watch them land. That's your
board. Some of the federal junction market has issued a pre-entering injunction barring
Alright, as we now leave the Sears Tower, our next stop is that great street, State Street. I'm gonna actually take a little sound, see how it is right now. I'll try it. I may regret it, but I'm gonna try it. For those that join me here at the Sears Tower, an official welcome to the Windy City, the home of your world champion Chicago Bulls. I gotta say that. Had to get it off my chest. Thank God that's over. Welcome to also the Chicago Trolley Tours today. My name is Reggie, one of the tour guides and your tour guide for the duration of your first trip. Our next stop, as I mentioned, will be that great street, State Street, as we now officially enter the very famous Loop area. It gets that nickname from many years ago. We had a rail trolley system like they have in San Francisco or New Orleans, like that streetcar Desire that made a loop around the city. But in 1897, Chicago built a train line. Now, the original plan in 1897 called for a subway. But Chicago, when it was established as a city, was established on a huge area of swampland. And trying to tunnel through swampland was not a very good idea. So instead of putting our trains 20 feet underground, we put them about 27 feet or so above ground. That train going over our heads right now is the Orange Line, going to the southwest side of the city to Midway Airport. It's one of the only two trains that makes the complete loop, 2.5 miles, north, south, east, and west, all the way around. The other train that goes all the way around is the Brown Line, going to the northwest side by places like Wicker Park. Isn't it? Goes through Wicker Park too, doesn't it? Wicker Park and Bucktown and Wrigley Field, home of the Chicago Cubs. We are now officially in downtown's loop area, home of the Financial District, which is right in front of us, the busiest area in the loop, LaSalle Street. This is the place where more money changes hands than anywhere else in the world, including more money than Wall Street. It's busy here because there are more banking institutions on this stretch of LaSalle than any other city. You have the Harris Bank branch on the right-hand side, which is actually the original home office of the Chicago Board of Trade. You have LaSalle National, the Bank of America, American National, the Northern Trust, and on my left-hand driver's side, the Federal Reserve Bank here in Chicago that prints the currency of our country. And as you can see, this is a very, very, very busy area with the cabs and the buses and the pedestrians. This is where I would say about a good 56% of the people that work downtown at work in the loop. There's about 2 million people or so that work out here in the loop. Many of them commute by train or by car or bus into the city from the suburbs, mostly by train though, coming into the city from Schaumburg, Villa Park, Merrill's Park, Maywood, Oak Park, Forest Park, Arlington Heights. Not too many people live in the city anymore because, as I understand it, property values in the suburbs are extremely least, I shouldn't say cheap, they're not as expensive as it is in the Chicagoland area, but they still all have to work out here. So they have to make the early morning commute in and the late evening commute back home for many of them. And you'll notice how nobody's smiling out here either. And you think after a world championship for the Bulls, for the sixth time, they've been all smiles, right? But as they know, there's nothing else left to cheer about unless you're a Cubs or a White Sox fan. And even then, it's not much to cheer about. Not to mention, these guys are going to be coming right back out here the following morning, so why smile? Very busy area. And trust me, if you're in this area at 5 o'clock, please don't be in the vehicle. You might better be better off walking around here. Because at 5 o'clock is when they all try to go home at one time. All right, as I maneuver the vehicle through the intersection, we're going to take this all the way north to Washington Street, home of Mayor Richard M. Daley, the mayor of the city of Chicago for some 10 years now. He's the only second-generation mayor we've ever had in our city's history because his father, for our more mature audiences on board, I recall his father, Richard J. Daley, the last of the big bosses, as they used to say. He was in charge of Chicago as its mayor for 25 years. He was the man that everybody gave credit to for getting the electoral votes that John F. Kennedy needed in 1960, but the same man that everybody blamed in 1968, even though it really wasn't his fault, during the National Democratic Convention, you might remember the whole world is watching, the whole world is watching. I was only a baby, so I don't recall that. My father remembers it very vividly, as he tells me. Now, City Hall, which is at the next corner here, okay, so it's this guy. Thank you.
Right here. Boy, oh boy.
City Hall was established here back in 1911, not only as the mayor's office, but the recorder of deeds, bureau of bridges, and streets and sanitations. Now, streets and sanitations are the people that have, I think we should really give a lot of credit to for keeping these streets out here so clean and free of all of the garbage and debris that tends to collect in the big city. That's one of Mayor Daley's major pet peeves. When he was elected, he was determined to clean these streets out here. Not that it wasn't clean before, but his major thing was keeping the streets spotless for our thousands of visitors that come into the city from all over the world. And over there on the left-hand side of the Daley Plaza, that in the center of the plaza is the Picasso statue and monument. That, however, is not the original Picasso. That is actually a copy or a replica of the first statue. It was unveiled here in 1968. It's made of the same material that the Daley Plaza and Courthouse is made of, Corten steel. I have to be honest with you once again, though, folks. When that statue was unveiled in 1968, as I'm told by my father and many other people that lived here, we were not impressed. Basically because we had no idea what the heck that thing was. Some said it was a chess pawn, a dragon, a dog. But if they said it was a dog, they were kind of on the right track, because I'm told that is a cross between Picasso's dog and one of his ex-wives. I'm not kidding. If you go to the back of that statue and look at it from the rear, it looks like the backside of a female's head. And that's why they speculate that might be his ex-wife. Which one, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Well, this will be our stop we'll make for that great street, State Street to the left. They're setting up, I believe, for Gallery 37. You also have the Hot Ticks booth out here, the Chicago Theater, Toys R Us, and Carson Perry Scott. Anyone for State Street?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, folks, as you exit, watch your step. You can catch the next trolleys right up here until about 5 o'clock, every 20 minutes or so. Old Blue Eyes knew what he was talking about, didn't he? State Street is truly a great street. Long before the Magnificent Mile became a mecca for shopping, this was the place to come to. If you were looking for a good bargain, even at Marshall Fields or Carson's, you'd find it out here. Oh, and by the way, if you're a real big Michael Jordan fan, go to Carson Perry Scott and buy his new cologne line. Yep, he's even got his own cologne for sale here at Carson Perry Scott. Not to mention, almost forgot his underwear, too. You name it, he's got it. As we leave the loop, we're going to be heading into the outskirts of the Grant Park neighborhood. Now, Grant Park is one of Chicago's three original parks, established as a park in 1893. It was actually built from the rubble and debris of the buildings and businesses that were destroyed in the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. Before the Great Fire broke out, this area right in front of us, from Grant Park all the way to Lake Michigan, or actually I should say take that back, from Michigan Avenue all the way out to Lake Michigan, was the lakefront at one time. This used to be Lake Michigan out here in front of us where the traffic light is at. Now to the left is the Chicago Cultural Center. That is an excellent spot to learn the cultural side of the city and the history of radio broadcasting at the Broadcasters Museum of Communications. Admission here is completely free. It's open from 10 to 6 during the week, and 10 to 5 on Saturday, 12 to 5 on Sunday. This at one time was the downtown branch of the Chicago Public Library. The architectural design of this beautiful landmark is borrowed from the Italian Renaissance era, with a spiral marble staircase inside and dome roof and ceiling. You can even get a tour of this area and also enjoy some wonderful concerts, poetry readings, and a few, every once in a while, a few seminars and art shows go on here as well, too. And all this on the left, now that is Grant Park there on the left-hand side. Named after Mr. Grant. You have Grant Park here. on the downtown area. To the north is Lincoln Park, and to the south is Jackson Park. Those are the big three parks in Chicago. But of the three, Grant Park here, named after Ulysses Grant, is the oldest in the city. And the only facility allowed in the Grant Park area is the Art Museum on the left-hand side, which has a huge collection of some of the best artwork from the French Impressionist era, as well as from China, Japan, Korea, the American Indians, and from the medieval years. All right, the Chicago Art Museum stop here on Michigan and Adams Street, walking distance, also to Miller's Pub and Berghoff's German Restaurant. It's $5.96. Forget about it. They're going pretty good. I just got to get pretty good.
Have fun or wait. Yeah, I noticed.
Where do you come from?
Yeah. Oh, wait, I thought brakes were over.
Yeah, this is how they should be.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can go ahead. You're out of green then.
I'm on green now? Okay, let me go look at the traffic on that.
Okay.
All right. Open it up, Lee.
Alright, well, once we let this traffic get by me coming from the north to the south, our next stop is the museum campus, the Field Museum of Natural History, the Shedd Aquarium, and the Adler Planetarium, also the pickup and drop-off point for our shuttle that goes to the Museum of Science and Industry. Now, we should get out there before the shuttle leaves, and just to be safe, I'll call the shuttle bus driver once we get a little bit closer to the museum campus. $5.96 to the Mosey shuttle, over.
Mosey shuttle.
Yes, Mosey, I'm just leaving Art now. I have a passenger on board that would like a ride with you, over. Mosey shuttle, I have a passenger on board that would like to ride with you. I'm leaving the Art Museum now, over. Sir, you're all set once we get there.
Okay, thanks.
I always look out for my people.
Thank you.
You bet. Come on, guys. I need room. I'm going to miss the light now. Oh, that's okay. Well, from here, once we get another green arrow, we'll go into the gateway of Grant Park here, which truly looks like a huge gateway. If you came from Interstate 90 or 94, or the Kennedy and Eisenhower, as we call it, coming into the city, it looks like a huge gateway view coming from the west to the east on Congress Parkway. And guarding this portion of the gateway on horseback are the Native American, or I should say Native statues, representing the Potawatomi Indian tribe, Bowman, and Spearman. Anyone on board speak Potawatomi? Nobody? Oh, I forgot to ask, you know. Someone might understand. Well, we should actually thank the Potawatomis for giving Chicago its name. Now, the settlers that came here were not pronouncing Chicago right. They were saying Chicago. In Potawatomi, it's actually pronounced Chicago. Now, that literally means in English, Chicago, the place of the smelly onion. I kid you not. Wild onions used to grow along the lakefront in huge numbers out here, sustaining the Potawatomis, particularly during the winter seasons out here. And I guess in honor of Mother Earth, the Potawatomis referred to this land as the place of the smelly onion. Now, on the near passenger side to your right will be Bowman, and across the street will be Spearman. But if you look real closely at these gentlemen, you will notice something's wrong with this picture. Can anyone tell me what it is if you look real closely at them? Beside the fact they don't have clothes. That's obvious. I'll give you a hint. Look at their hands. You notice something's wrong with Bowman?
Yeah, they don't have a bow.
That's right. Bowman doesn't have a bow. And check out Spearman, he doesn't have a spear. Now that was actually done deliberately by the artist that designed these statues in 1929, Ivan Mastrovic. When you saw Bowman bowless and Spearman spearless, he wanted you to envision in your mind a world without war. That is why he did that. And directly in front of me, the largest display fountain of its kind in the world. The Clarence Buckingham Memorial Fountain. Now this fountain is really an impressive sight. It has been here since 1927, and its architecture is borrowed from the fountain located at the Palace of Versailles in Versailles, France. Now I know someone recognizes this from a TV show, right?
Married with Children.
You
right?
Betcha. Give that man a bell ring. All right.
I knew it took place in Chicago. Right?
The Al Bundy fountain, as we used to call it. That fountain actually pumps about 14,000 gallons of water into the air. But you know what? It's completely controlled by computers. And those computers are not based in Chicago. They're based now in Atlanta, Georgia. So from Atlanta, the Buckingham Fountain gets turned off and on every day at 10 o'clock through the evening hours until 11 p.m. by computers in Atlanta. You can almost set your clock to that fountain back there. On the weekends, I would like to come out there because every once in a while, you might see a wedding party or two taking a picture there. But one rule you have to remember and keep in mind, stand upwind of the fountain. If you don't, you'll have a very wet dress and tuxedo. That's the only rule we ask that you do if you decide to do that at the Buckingham Fountain. There you can see on the near left side, the Field Museum of Natural History, home of the dinosaur bones and the fossil displays, the other wildlife animal exhibits, including the two male Savu lions that the movie Ghosts in the Darkness were based on, and that huge T-Rex fossil they're still actually putting together, that huge skull, which is mammoth. They say that fossil will stand about 20 feet tall when it's completed. It won't be actually completely on display until the year 2000. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to visit the Field Museum, now is a good time to do it, because today is free day. No admission to the Field Museum today. On the far left, that's the John G. Shedd Aquarium, the largest indoor aquarium in this part of the country, home of the beluga whales and dolphins and over 8,000 different aquatic animals, including 650 different species of fish. Now, if you're here tomorrow, the aquarium is half price on Thursdays. We'll be stopping first by the aquarium and also the Adler Planetarium. You can't really see the planetarium from here, but as we go into the museum campus, you get a real good look at it from here. There you can do some stargazing at the Dome Observatory and learn about our universe and solar system at our Sky Show exhibit. There are two terrific sky shows at the planetarium, giving you a history of our universe and solar system. One is called Exploring New Worlds, and Is There Life on Mars is the other one. And for the kids at the planetarium, there's a regular feature playing there called Meteor Mouse. Now, does anyone recognize the Field Museum, this particular look at it from this entrance, from an old movie, well, not an old movie, but a movie that was done here about 3 or 4 years ago? It was a real creepy film. Anyone recall the movie called The Relic? Nobody ever saw that? Well, it's on videotape if you want to rent it. It's really a creepy movie. Some part Homo sapien, part dog, part grasshopper, part dragonfly creature was running amok around here, like basically like Jaws. When the movie was over, about the size of that CTA bus on the left, going around eating up all the workers and employees here at the Field Museum. As we get a little bit closer to the museum campus, the newly constructed museum campus, on my left, or actually now in front of me, is the dome area of the Adler Planetarium, the Max Adler Planetarium. It's a 12-sided building. The 12 sides of this structure actually represent the 12 signs of the zodiac, from Aquarius to Taurus. And you see those very expensive yachts and boats out here. That is Burnham Harbor, where many of our well-to-do citizens have their boats and yachts docked at, including Oprah Winfrey, Michael Jordan, and Scottie Pippen. He's got a boat docked there called the Four Rings. He should actually change it to Six Rings now. think it's called Purple. I could be wrong, though. And way out there beyond Burnham Harbor, along the trees along the right, it looks like a little airport tower out there. That is Meigs Airport. You can see a plane along the horizon taking off out there. That's a non-commercial airfield used primarily for private planes using Meigs Airport as a shortcut coming into the city.